The deadline to comply with UK Corporate Governance Code is fast approaching. How are UK companies responding? And what are risk leaders doing to make sure that their response is proportionate? In this interview, we talk about some of the insights shared by practicing risk leaders during recent collaborations facilitated by Risk Leadership Network. How are risk teams engaging their board and executive on the changes? What are risk leaders doing to provide assurance for the declarations? And how can you avoid duplication with other existing regulatory work? Welcome to Risk Leadership Network's interview, A Proportionate Response to UK Corporate Governance Code. I'm your host, Vanessa, and today I'm joined by our Head of Insight and Engagement, Christina. Hello, Christina. The deadline's getting close, isn't it?
Hello, and yes, it's really crept up. UK companies are expected to comply or explain with the reform for financial years beginning on or after the 1st of January 2025, though Provision 29, which is around boards monitoring and reviewing the company's risk management and internal controls framework, that will apply to financial years beginning on or after the 1st of January 2026.
Now, we're about to delve into how risk leaders are getting ready for this deadline very soon. But first, I wanted to clarify where these insights are coming from. So Christina, perhaps you could explain to listeners what Risk Leadership Network is and how we've come to be sharing insights on UK Corporate Governance Code.
So Risk Leadership Network is a corporate membership network for risk leaders and their immediate teams. Members join our network because they really see the value in learning directly from peers, as well as validating and benchmarking their approaches. They're doing all of this ultimately to improve the risk maturity of their organisations.
And what kind of profile are those members?
Our members include many FTSE 100 companies, although all of the non-financial organisations in the ASX 20 and lots of privately owned multinational organisations from around the world are also members.
The membership is pretty impressive, right? There's BHP, Tesco, Google, Johnson & Johnson, Glencore, IHG, Telstra, Coles Group, to name but a few.
Yes, joining Risk Leadership Network means learning from and collaborating with some of the most experienced risk leaders in the world.
And how have we come to be working with some of these members on UK Corporate Governance Code?
Well, everything we do is really bespoke. So each member organisation has a dedicated risk engagement manager on our team who regularly meets with them to talk through their specific risk priorities, their challenges, and we make a plan for how Risk Leadership Network will support these priorities. A member might want a piece of benchmarking, they might want to speak directly with peers, might want us to help build a useful tool. We basically deliver outputs that directly address their key risk priorities.
Brilliant. And am I right in thinking that UK Corporate Governance Code is an example of one of those priorities?
Yes, exactly. Since the FRC made their announcement all the way back in May 2023, a number of our UK members have regularly brought up the code reform in their catch-ups and their quarterly engagement reviews with their dedicated engagement manager as something they're prioritising and they'd like to collaborate on.
And by collaborate, is this just risk leaders having a chat, or is there more to it than that?
There's definitely more to it than that. Since the FRC's announcement, we've facilitated a number of virtual meetings for risk leaders for them to collaborate on different elements of the code reform. It's not just talking about it. Risk leaders at FTSE and large UK organisations have exchanged ideas about their interpretation of the code changes, what they are prioritising, and on some occasions even shared redacted versions of part of their approach on screen.
Wow. And what does that mean for organisations? How did it help?
So to give you a specific example, we held a virtual meeting on developing an audit and assurance policy. We actually produced a written benchmark report on that too. But I remember during that meeting, several risk leaders shared a redacted version of their audit and assurance policy on screen during the meeting. They were all roughly about 2 pages long, and one member who was attending the meeting who just started to plan a 20-page document for their audit and assurance policy. So when they saw that everyone else was doing just 2 pages, they realised that their plans were actually going to be overkill.
I bet they were pleased they came to the meeting.
Yes, exactly. And just producing a 2-page document, like the rest of the pack, would save them weeks of putting together a much more detailed document and having it approved in their organisation.
Brilliant example. And of course, The audit and assurance policy is no longer a requirement under the code, but it's a good example of a practical output from a collaboration.
Yes, and maybe more recent examples of collaboration around the code changes include the sharing of assurance maps and dry runs, testing approaches with risk peers ahead of the changes coming into effect. Really, it's that peeking behind the curtain and getting valuable insights on how other organisations' risk functions are tackling shared challenges. That's what's really valuable, I think.
And if you'd like to peek behind that curtain and get involved in some of our upcoming collaborations, then please do get in touch with us through the link in the article you found this interview in, or go to riskleadershipnetwork.com/UKCGC. Now, Christina, you mentioned staying with the pack before. Is that something that is important to risk leaders when it comes to UK corporate governance code reform?
Absolutely. Of course, everybody wants to make sure they comply. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to undercook their response compared to their peers. But also, nobody wants to launch a huge response in a given area where nobody else is. It's expensive, it's resource intensive. Knowing that what you're doing is comparable to peers when it comes to the UK corporate governance code reform is really valuable.
So, for almost the last 18 months, Risk Leadership Network has been facilitating targeted collaboration about different aspects of UK corporate governance code reform in line with the priorities of our members affected by the changes. And what we're going to be sharing today, Christina, is
some of the key insights and trends we've gleaned during these collaborations. Really importantly, these are insights shared by Risk Leadership Network members, all practicing risk leaders at large non-financial UK organisations.
Now, I'm sure some of our listeners will be wondering how we honour confidentiality from these collaborations before we blurt out all our members' secrets in this interview.
Well, we won't be blurting out any confidential information from our members. In fact, all our meetings take place under the Chatham House rule. So that basically means that you're allowed to take insights and approaches back to your organisation, but you're not permitted to repeat which person or company those insights come from. Also, no one is ever sharing business sensitive information. Our members are only focused on exchanging ideas about the practical implementation and the embedding of enterprise risk management.
That makes complete sense. So we'll be talking about some of the approaches shared in these meetings by our members, but we won't reveal which companies they're coming from.
And we'll also talk about any overarching trends we've noticed. What are risk leaders really focusing on? What are their main areas of focus?
Brilliant. And it is important to stress here that Risk Leadership Network is not advising on this. We're simply facilitating peer collaboration on the subjects and distilling some of those insights shared between our members who are practicing senior risk leaders at large non-financial organisations. At the time of recording, we're just less than 2 months away from that 1st of January 2025 deadline. So what have risk leaders been sharing during recent collaborations?
Well, engagement with the business has been a key discussion point.
With the board or with the Audit and Risk Committee?
The consensus at the latest meeting among our members was that the board and the Audit and Risk Committee are pretty engaged on the controls assurance process. This hasn't always been the case. But the challenge for many at this stage actually appears to be engaging with the Executive Committee.
And why do you think that is?
So some members have told us that members of the Executive Committee have less overall awareness of the risk and controls framework.
And did any members have a solution?
So a few members were holding risk days for their senior management teams. For some, they were annual. For others, they were one-off events.
And were those risk day workshops specifically on the code reform?
Mostly not. Most of the risk leaders were using these workshops to go back to basics to help the senior management team's understanding of the risk and controls framework. Some of our members said they even went back to defining what is a risk and what is a control.
So some proper risk fundamentals. So a recent trend has been to focus on the executive committee, but I'm assuming engagement across the business is still a huge challenge for a lot of risk leaders.
Certainly, there are challenges around the wider business. The UK Corporate Governance Code isn't simply a set of rules to adhere to. That's what I hear a lot of members saying. It's more a changing mindset. It's a cultural shift towards better risk management. For many of our members, the risk team's job is to bring the rest of the business along on that journey. Several risk leaders have reiterated the FRC's message that really the code changes are things that organisations with good governance and risk management should be doing anyway.
So what approaches are some of our members taking to ensure that crucial engagement?
So a few companies have held cross-functional workshops, gathering leaders from various group functions to establish common definitions and address gaps in the framework. Another organisation has set up a steering committee to win the hearts and minds of business leaders.
And apart from sharing these ideas at the last member meeting on UK Corporate Governance Code, is there anything else we've been doing in the network to support risk leaders with board or executive engagement?
Yes, a couple of months ago, one head of risk was really focusing on board and executive engagement with the UK Corporate Governance Code changes.
And what were their plans?
Well, a workshop with their board on material controls and a workshop with the senior exec explaining to them the code changes. So they put together a draft agenda, but then they wanted to make sure that they got the most out of those workshops.
And this is when they came to us, so...
Yep.
How did we help?
Yeah, exactly. So we set them up with one-to-one calls with risk leaders who had done something similar already, either with their board, their executive, or with both. So during those calls, the member got honest, constructive feedback from other heads of risk.
Honest feedback that I'm sure gave them confidence in their plans and also probably gave them some improvements that they could be sure had already worked at other organisations. A reminder that you can request to get involved in our upcoming collaborations on UK Corporate Governance Code using the links on the page that this interview is hosted and also at riskleadershipnetwork.com/UKCGC. Is there anything else that companies seem to be prioritising to address the code changes?
Well, so many of our members started with defining what materiality means to their business and taking things from there. I've also noticed this widespread focus on making sure there's a clear, consistent understanding across the business of what a risk is, what a control is, what is material to the business. I think it's from that consistency that companies then build strong assurance and risk data and risk insights.
Companies have to make specific declarations under the new changes, right?
Right, yes. They will have to make declarations concerning the effectiveness of their material controls. Boards have to conduct annual reviews of material controls, including financial, operational, reporting, and compliance controls, and then disclose their effectiveness. You can understand why then heads of risk want to ensure a solid foundation of data and assurance and control testing to lead their companies to those declarations. One of our members shared that his risk team has started with draft statements, the declarations, presented these to their board to initiate discussion, and is essentially working backwards to determine what sufficient assurance will be needed to make these declarations. And actually, several other members really wanted to then take this similar approach as well.
So members often use our network meetings to validate their thinking before implementing something, as well as to get fresh thinking so they don't have to reinvent the wheel. Have you noticed any such solutions surrounding the code changes?
One clear outcome that comes to mind is the fact that several members shared how they're leveraging existing requirements, reporting, other regulations to avoid duplicated efforts. So, members are leveraging existing controls frameworks, work streams, assurance efforts, and data collection for TCFD, CSRD, other requirements as part of their corporate code change preparations.
So it sounds like members speak quite candidly with each other during these network meetings.
Oh yes, because of the Chatham House rule and because no business sensitive information is shared, members are really keen to dig into the heart of the challenge they're facing and share tried and tested solutions, lessons learned and priorities with each other. As an example, at a recent meeting, one member asked the group, uninhibited, whether their organisations view risk management and controls frameworks as one framework rather than two separate ones, especially in this context of the code changes. The large majority of the group agreed their businesses see it as one framework, but this got the heads of risk thinking and it sparked a really great discussion on the practical ways they're trying to better align risk management and controls, which is something at the heart of the code changes.
Now, I made a note to come back to this. Earlier, you mentioned dry runs. What do you mean by that?
Okay, so dry runs. Instead of gunning for perfection with the controls assurance process ahead of the formal introduction of the new requirements, several companies are taking a more iterative approach. So on each dry run, they're testing and upgrading the process so that eventually it reaches the required standard before the code becomes mandatory.
So they're hoping that each dry run will be closer to meeting the requirements than the last?
Yeah, exactly. This idea was first brought up in a collaborative virtual meeting that we facilitated at the end of September. It turned out quite a few of the FTSE organisations present were taking this approach.
And has there been any follow-up on that since the first that it was first mentioned at that meeting in September?
Yes, I can give you a specific example. One of our members was planning their first dry run and wanted to sense check with peers before they started.
So how did they go about doing that?
Well, they spoke to their risk engagement manager at Risk Leadership Network, and we facilitated a one-to-one virtual meeting between them and a risk leader who had already conducted a few dry runs.
So it helped them validate their plans?
Yes. During the meeting, the member could ask candidly about how their peer had conducted their dry runs, dig into details, and they came out of the other side with a lot more confidence that they were along the right track.
So what else springs to mind, Christina, when you think back to all those discussions that have been taking place between risk leaders on the code changes?
Well, something related that has come up quite a bit is assurance mapping. Although assurance mapping itself isn't a requirement under the code changes, it is something that a lot of UK FTSE companies are doing.
If it's not required, why are they doing it?
Well, to help them have a better view of their risk and controls effectiveness.
And have risk leaders been collaborating on this through Risk Leadership Network?
Yes, but we have also produced a bespoke benchmark for these risk leaders, where we detailed 5 effective assurance maps that mature organisations are using.
That sounds really useful. And I'm right in thinking that Risk Leadership Network produced quite a few bespoke benchmarks for their members.
Yeah, on average about 8 a month.
So if I were a member, how would I go about getting a benchmark created?
So you would approach a risk engagement manager from our team and then tell them what your priority is. If a benchmark is the best way to support you with that priority, then we would discuss in more detail what you would like to get out of it, what kind of companies you'd like us to include in the research, and then that's it. You leave it all to us. We'll approach risk leaders in our network with relevant sector, maturity, geography, company size, whatever you've told us you need, and then we produce a report from that data for you.
But then that benchmark wouldn't just be available to me, right? All Risk Leadership Network members would be able to see it.
Exactly. The biggest value we give is a quick turnaround of bespoke benchmarks to help you with the exact priority that you're working on. But there's a real bonus in having access to hundreds of bespoke benchmarks that we've already created for other organisations. As our members discover, there's often a risk leader in the network with a very similar priority to them, and you're able to tap into a solution we provided for somebody else immediately as a first port of call.
So what's next at Risk Leadership Network for UK Corporate Governance Code?
We'll continue to facilitate collaboration in response to the priorities that our members raise with us. Our UK members are very active on UK Corporate Governance Code, and we've got 3 virtual meetings coming up.
And in those virtual meetings, what will members be collaborating on?
So one is focused on effectiveness reviews. So heads of risk will share the methods and the metrics they're using to assess how effective their risk management and internal controls framework is. The second meeting centres around readiness plans. During that virtual workshop, risk leaders are going to be sharing the strategies and the structured action plans they've developed to keep them on track for achieving the code requirements in their next annual reporting.
And the final one?
Well, I wouldn't say final, as I have no doubt we'll be facilitating more workshops on UK Corporate Governance Code as and when members raise more elements that they'd like to flesh out with their peers.
Of course. But the final one on the schedule at the time of recording?
We'll be focusing on engaging with the board and the business. Many risk leaders are still focusing on this, and they'll be sharing their success stories and their lessons learned for bringing the board and the ARC and the executive along on this journey with them.
Now, these meetings are just for member organisations of Risk Leadership Network. Is that right?
Yes. Organisations have an annual membership. When you join, you can attend as many network meetings as you like.
And you'll also have a dedicated risk engagement manager who facilitates collaboration directly for you.
Yes.
I loved hearing a member recently describing their engagement manager as being like another member of their team.
Yes, you'll raise a priority with your engagement manager and we'll support you with the most appropriate collaborative solution, facilitating a one-to-one or a workshop-style meeting with your peers, creating bespoke benchmarks, or even creating a tool or a template for you.
Now, occasionally we do allow non-members to attend member meetings if it helps to give another perspective or new ideas for our members, but it also gives that non-member a real sense of what we're all about. So if you do want to attend one of these meetings, then please do reach out to us in the contact details shared in this audio blog, and we'll discuss how to get you involved some more. Of course, we can also discuss membership with you. So how do new members go about joining?
Just get in touch with us and we'll take it from there. The best way is to go to riskleadershipnetwork.com/UKCGC and fill in the form. I'll get back to you and we can arrange a time for us to discuss how you can get involved. We'll also be able to run through how we operate and give you some examples of the ways in which we've supported some members with similar challenges to you. If we're a good fit for each other and if you've got budget, we'll welcome you as a member and start facilitating some collaborations specifically for you.
And on that note, I think we'll wrap up. So Christina, thank you so much for sharing the insights and thank you very much to everybody who's listened.
Thank you, Vanessa. And yes, please do get in touch if you have any thoughts on this audio blog or would like to discuss how to get involved in Risk Leadership Network.